You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Where are you speaking to us from today?
Well, I'm back in sweaty Florida, actually. I was in San Francisco for the last 6 weeks, just escaping the heat to America's true paradise for cooler. Anyway, yeah, I'm in Boynton Beach now.
Rick, gold topping $4,000 for the first time. Is that the peak, or is there more action to be seen here?
Well, I'm tempted to say it is the peak only because the bozos at the Wall Street Journal finally discovered gold. Some may have noticed that they actually led with a gold story the other day, you know, $1,600 after the fact. We've had this nice rally, and our financial paper of record has finally picked up on it. And who knows, maybe even the New York Times will do a story on gold. So those things sort of say, well, we're at a top, but in reality, I think we're just barely getting started. I put out a 4128 target for December gold, a few hundred points below here. And I don't want, I've cautioned my own subscribers against inferring that this is somehow some blow off top, some sort of goal for gold, but it's obviously got bigger things in mind than anyone can imagine at this point. But gold is certainly predicting a great change in the world order. And my suspicion is it's not going to be positive changes that align with everything that you might infer that Trump is planning. I think he's doing the right things, but there is no right thing. Nothing's really going to work, and I can explain why if you'd like to hear more.
We always like to hear why.
Well, I think if you take everything that he's doing at face value, it sounds good enough. Like, we're going to reshore manufacturing, and we're going to recapitalize America so that the middle class can buy homes, that the younger people can buy starter homes and this and that. And I think that Trump's guys have already correctly predicted an easing of what I call grocery bin inflation. I used to say that as sarcastically. Everybody was always talking about inflation, and I've been stuck on the subject of deflation since the early 1990s, when nobody would touch that topic. And I still see a deflationary calamity somewhere down the road. But I think more immediately, Trump's guys are saying, just when everybody's all excited about inflation and thinking it's going to be ruinous, that we're going to see an easing of consumer inflation. But when he talks and they talk at the official level about inflation and moderating deflation, I think that they're fixated on the wrong deflation. You know, their deflation is the kind of mild, benign kind that we get from technological advancements and global competition. But my deflation is a completely different thing. It's a debt deflation. And since we are talking about debt, that if depending on how liberal you want to be with the numbers, it's up above $2 quadrillion. Or if you want to use persnickety, legacy media numbers, you could say 500 trillion. In either case, that greatly exceeds what this world produces in goods and services. So we've got this highly leveraged financial juggernaut, and it would overwhelm whatever petty forces of inflation and deflation we talk about at the political level. So Trump's thinking we're going to grow our way out of all our problems, but I still think we have to cross the valley of deflation.
So what happens to the economy with this kind of outlook?
Well, we're never really going to get off the launching pad. You know, I think we've talked about this before, but just the simplistic notion of reshoring manufacturing neglects to consider that to the extent we succeed in bringing back manufacturing to this country, it's a given that it has to be competitive with manufacturing elsewhere in the world. But in order for that to be true, we're going to have factories that are completely AI run, and there are no humans, just robots. So we're not really going to put anyone to work. And while we're at it, we should really call a spade and see AI for what it is. It's a giant job destroyer. And that's not withstanding the fact that it's doing some really cool things, for one, in medicine. You know, it's accelerating process of sequencing protein strands and getting a handle on where our health problems come from. You know, I have one of my oldest friends is a physician, and he's been putting off shoulder surgery for a few years, and now thinks that we're getting very close to a technology that's going to allow him to grow a new shoulder with his own cells. But his bigger point was that if you can hang on, if you're mid-70s like I am, if you can hang on for another 5 years, the science will make it possible for you to live to be 120. So he's very optimistic. And I think that AI, even a company I'm invested in that uses TerraWave spectrum to detect the presence of volatile organic compounds, it can detect explosives and disease and pathogens, all kinds of things. Well, AI has greatly reduced the amount of time and money it takes to develop what's called a VOC signature for each of these problems. You do it right, and you wind up with something that could sit in a hospital emergency room. People come into the room and just breathe into it, and the tech would know exactly what's wrong with you. So every condition or many conditions commonly seen in emergency rooms have a VOC, volatile organic compound signature. So I can see amazing advances in medicine through the advancements that will come through the thinking power of AI, but in purely economic terms, it's just a job killer.
What do we do with all these unjobbed people?
I think they'll be okay. In the sense of wasting away unto death, they're going to have Zuckerberg's device strapped on their heads, and I think it will probably deliver a quality of pornography that'll keep guys occupied until the end of the earth. So they'll have their hands full as long as someone feeds them.
Right, and where's that money going to come from? I know in Europe they're talking about a robot tax. If you bring in technology that displaces people, somehow you have to help fund looking after those people.
Well, nice that the Europeans found that after all these years. That was Bill Gates's idea, and we've talked about that a few times. It's probably the only place where I find myself agreeing with Gates, but he put that out there years ago, the idea that we're going to have to tax robots. And it seems, at least from a purely economic standpoint, the only solution. Because, yes, everybody's going to be out of a job. And we can see already many people who are still working and will eventually be out of jobs. And by that, I mean pretty much anyone with a law degree. They're going to fight it tooth and nail, but the handwriting's on the wall for people who practice law. You know, a machine can do it better. You know, I just paid over $20,000 just to reclaim my own trademark, Hidden Pivots. Some shyster had stolen the term. And when I look at the legal work that was done to do that, I paid $1,800 an hour to a law firm. What was all just boilerplate. And the two lawyers had at it for a little bit, exchanging letters that were costing me, you know, $2,000 a piece. And but everything, when you look at the paper trail there, it's nothing a machine couldn't have done. And if you want to push AI's potential up into the medical arena, and to be as cynical about it as I can, you have a situation where you'll have the medical school saying, well, we really don't need to train the doctors that well. We just need to train technicians who can operate a Da Vinci robotic surgery machine that's been programmed by the few competent surgeons who are left. So, and we're already on the slippery slope there with medical diagnostics, where the industry in cahoots with the insurers is saying, hey, telemedicine is great. You know, you don't really have to see your doctor. Just meet with them online, and that's all you need. But of course, any doctor knows better, and any patient who's experienced that type of care knows better as well.
Now,
I
was going to say, though, we've all seen examples, though, of AI just making up things where, you know, you can ask AI about a certain thing and you know the facts of the case and it makes up stuff. We've had lawyers use AI in Vancouver and it cited precedents to back up a case that didn't actually exist. The lawyer wasn't cited for contempt, but almost.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, AI will continue to play interesting tricks on us that will be no more than fascinating items that we read about in the news, and nobody can really predict where it's going. You know, in some instances where they programmed AI, they've told AI to turn itself off, to deep six itself. It starts acting like HAL 9000. You know, it's Dave, I wouldn't pull that plug. And it actually creates a means through code, really, that will keep it alive. So AI is capable of doing cool things like that, but that only has, let's say, entertainment value at best, and at worst, it has the potential to end life on this earth.
A friend of mine who's an expert on AI said they've calculated there's a 10% chance AI is going to kill off humans because it just considers us useless. Or you give it a question, how do we feed everybody in the world? Well, what if its decision is, well, kill off 3 million or 3 billion people and then you'll have enough food for everybody?
Yeah, and I think all the bozos that put those stories out, like to write about them to fill newspapers, are not really thinking it through. You know, you have to sort of consider what would the instrumentality be that AI uses to snuff us all out. Would it create an oxygen destroyer, you know, the same sort of weapon that was used to deal with Godzilla? So I think the real killer is economic, because we've got all these zillionaires thinking there's no limit to how much money they can put into a technology that's yet to produce a profit for any of its users. And, you know, there are a couple small companies that are making a few bucks with AI, but nothing that's going to return the trillions of dollars that all these mega players are putting into it. You know, Microsoft, by the way, just exacerbated the effect because they're splitting off from OpenAI. They want to develop their own co-pilot rather than rely on OpenAI's ChatGPT. So as though the world needed a huge new server learning, you know, server farm that needs nuclear power just to do all the learning that it's got to do. So there is a question of how many of those installations we need on the planet. Zuckerberg wants one, and Microsoft wants one, and Musk has already got one, and who knows what Sam Altman wants. So it's inevitable that most of them are going to be disappointed with the returns.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's your outlook for the stock markets this fall?
I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to touch back on gold because I've had an email from someone who wants to do a book about the coming spectacular rally, the bull market in silver prices. And I think he's betting on the wrong horse, really. The character of gold's bull market is so completely driven by institutions that you have to question the old story about, you know, silver will eventually kick in because it's the poor man's bullion. But I don't think that's necessarily true. And the idea is kind of impelled by the historical, the ratio that's obtained between gold and silver. So here we are pushing up into the heights, historically speaking, with a gold ratio silver of greater than 100 to 1. And everyone thinks it's going to return to quote-unquote normal, whatever that is. But I think it's possible, not a given really, but I think it's possible that the gold-silver ratio will get even worse as gold continues to rally. And at this point, even though I put out bullish targets for gold and a current one of 4,128, I'm now persuaded that maybe it's going much higher, like into the $8,000 to $10,000 range, or even above that. I felt strongly years ago that that would never happen, but seeing the way it looks at 4,000, and the fact that whatever it's that price is discounting hasn't even reared its ugly head, I don't want to put a cap on gold. I'm just putting targets out there, and depending on the ease with which the rally penetrates those targets, it gives me a pretty good idea of how much trend strength remains.
What's your take on Bitcoin right now?
It's still a fraud, but I've got a target up. I've been using a target of, I think it's 132,000. And it's very easy to trade Bitcoin, certainly with the system that I use, which loves violent, gratuitously vicious trading vehicles like Bitcoin. There's nothing behind Bitcoin, and I tend to doubt that we're going to get into a world that sort of shifts away from dollars and into gold and Bitcoin. I don't like to classify Bitcoin right up there with gold in terms of its viability as a store of value or anything else. It certainly hasn't proven its worth as a transaction medium. It's a purely speculative vehicle. So you don't really build money systems on speculative media. So Bitcoin's a big hoax, but that doesn't mean it can't go higher. And as anybody who's followed my forecast knows, I'm capable of seeing the upside and nailing the swings. So I say worthless, but we've talked about this before. Bitcoin is not truly worthless because the fact that it uses a blockchain technology that can record and securely store transaction data makes it worth something. But I'm thinking more like $2 to $3 rather than the current $121,000. So and to come back to the stock market, which you asked about, it's just in an insane blow up. It goes up pretty much every day, other than days when you've gone to sleep the night before thinking, you know, how can you lose being long this market? So things are selling off moderately today, but suspiciously, the things needing the most selling off, namely the lunatic sector, which the press has misnamed the Magnificent Seven, makes me want to gag, really. But anyway, when they're not really getting hit that hard today, and some of the stalwarts like Meta and Netflix and Nvidia are all up a little bit. So whenever we have a sell-off that's not really matched or exaggerated in the lunatic sector, we know that it's just the calm, manipulative, totally engineered rotation of money from one sector to another. And that's been a key feature of the bull market, is it's not requiring any new capital to push things up and up and up and up forever. And I've explained a dozen times in my own newsletter how that works, using Microsoft as an example. You know, whenever you get a gap opening based on news that comes out after the close, no stock changes hands in that gap, and yet Microsoft, second biggest company in the world by capitalization, when it gaps up $8 or $10 or $12, that creates hundreds of billions of dollars in the blink of an eye, literally, of quote unquote the wealth effect. The wealth effect is an even bigger fraud than Bitcoin, but you know, as long as anybody's got Microsoft in their portfolio, it feels real enough. But I would just suggest that all those portfolio holders go out and buy their yachts now, because they're not going to be able to swap Microsoft stock for yachts at some point down the road.
Are there any sectors you think that could become hot again? Marijuana, something like that?
No. I mean, there's just rotation. And it's rotation. If a chimpanzee were to look at 10 possibilities, well, we'll rotate money from the banking sector to healthcare and this and that. It's just a game. That's all. So when we talk about hot, it's a carnival game. So as far as marijuana getting hot, no, that's never going to happen. You only have to read the comments. The Wall Street Journal did a put-up story, you know, just let's fill the space somehow, about accidents, car accidents, and marijuana's role. And they did a pretty sloppy job. They really, you know, they're basically saying marijuana is driving the accident rate higher, and yet they couldn't even produce a statistic that answers the question, well, how many of these accidents where marijuana was a factor were, you know, and how many of them was alcohol a cofactor? So it was a really sloppy story, but if you read the hundreds of comments that followed the story, there are a lot of people who say, hey, we've underestimated the harm that marijuana can do. And it's certainly, there's a debate out there, and no statistical database is going to end the debate, really. So we're still debating, even though half the states are, you know, have legalized marijuana, some barely so, like Florida. But no, we're not going to see a hot marijuana sector.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Huh. There's certainly a lot of interesting possibilities, aren't there? I don't know. I mean, I've gotten so bored writing about the market and what a fake this whole bull market is that I've stopped my commentary for a couple months and put out nice paintings done by friends of mine, paintings and photos and things. But and if I were to say, well, just kind of watch the political scene, for the way to do that knowledgeably is to make sure that it doesn't, your daily fare doesn't include anything that Karl Rove has written. But you know, I think Trump is headed for a fall. I voted for the guy twice, and I'm supportive of many of his ideas, but I just think he's in too many places and too many times. He's taken on too much, really. And as I was implying earlier, the path to the Trump promised land is not direct. We really, how can you say that the economy's doing great when it's generally even conceded by the bozos at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal that the middle class is just barely making it? You know, we've got a free spending economy on luxury goods. Even that may be starting to crack, actually. It certainly has in China. But we've got sort of a very narrow slice of the economy, of the population doing great, but most of it doing very, very, maybe I'll add a third, very poorly. And sooner or later, you have to reckon with that. You know, it's so I think I hate to, you know, sound like a broken record, but the stock market's it's definitely headed for a fall, and headed, but today it's really falling hard. I see that the crooks have gold down close to $80 here, and it's just a show. I don't think we've actually topped. And so in order to watch anything, you have to be prepared to have your expectations challenged, thwarted, refuted, whatever. It's just it's a pretty boring show, really. And maybe time to cultivate your own garden.
Well, I'm growing my own lettuce, mint, and thyme. Now, if I could just get a cow on the balcony.
Well.
Or goats, I guess. A goat. Goat's milk's handy.
Well, yeah, I know people have had good success in Berkeley, friends of mine with chickens, and they're actually eating home-laid eggs. And I know also my friend Charles Hugh Smith is cultivating a garden for its nutritional value. It's not just growing vine tomatoes and things like that. It's growing things that have high nutritional value. So it's not even a question of cultivating your garden. It's perfecting your garden.
Rick, always fun chatting with you.
Likewise, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.